What happens after The Hobbit? 70-odd years later comes The Lord of the Rings, obviously, but what before then? What happens to Dale, the Lonely Mountain, and all the characters we meet? Hi everyone, this is Robert. Welcome to In Deep Geek. If you like theories, background, history and lore about The Lord of the Rings, A Song of Ice and Fire, and The Witcher, this is the place for you. Welcome. So, what did happen after The Hobbit? It was just a little tale, but when you think about it, the entire geopolitical situation in the north of Middle-earth was altered, and lots of people's lives were changed forever. So let's start with Bilbo. He went back to the Shire and his old life. Yes, there was a little bit of a bother with his possessions being sold off because people thought he died, but he got most of that back, even if he had to buy some of it. His silver spoons, though, well, they never returned, and let's blame the Sackville Bagginses for that. But the biggest thing for Bilbo was probably the blow to his reputation. He'd always been a very respectable hobbit, you see, and now, as we read, forever after, he remained an elf friend, and had the honour of dwarves, wizards, and all such folk as ever passed that way, but he was no longer quite respectable. He was in fact held by all the hobbits of the neighbourhood to be queer, except by his nephews and nieces on the Took side, but even they were not encouraged in their friendship by their elders. I'm sorry to say that he did not mind. He was quite content. Content and rich. His 14th share of the dragon hoard was considerable, and he had in addition some pretty impressive bits of loot, the sword Sting and the mithril mail shirt, which he placed in the Matham House, a sort of hobbity part storage house, part museum. And he had the One Ring, of course, which he mostly used to hide from the Sackville Bagginses. Gandalf, meanwhile, kept an eye on him, and over time grew ever more suspicious of that ring. But on a day-to-day basis, he was mostly just doing Gandalf things for a few decades, roaming the land and trying to support the Free Peoples in opposing Sauron, who declared his return openly in Mordor 10 years after the events of The Hobbit, but more about him in a moment. I did a whole other video on what happens to the dwarves after The Hobbit, if you'd like to see that. The short version is that three of them, Thorin, Fili and Kili, died in the story itself, but the others prospered. We know the most about Balin, who actually visited Bilbo in the Shire with Gandalf 8 years after The Hobbit. Bilbo noted then Balin's rather ostentatious jewelled belt and noticeably longer beard. Life had been good. Life had been good for most of the surviving dwarves, to be honest. Dwalin lived to a very old age. Bomber became so fat he had to be carried around by attendants. We know less about Bifur, Bofur, Dori and Nori, but they all got their 1/14th share of a literal hill of gold and gems, so presumably they too lived their best lives at Erebor. Glóin and his son Gimli made their way to Rivendell at the start of The Lord of the Rings to report on events, and Óin and Ori accompanied Balin in an attempt to retake Moria. That didn't end well, as we saw when the Fellowship passed through in The Lord of the Rings, but again I did a whole other video on that if you're interested. Basically, 3 of the 13 dwarves died during The Hobbit, 3 more in the attempt to reclaim Moria, and the remainder lived long and happy lives mostly at Erebor. And Dain Ironfoot, who came to the dwarves' aid before the Battle of the Five Armies, became their king. Perhaps most notably, as well as re-establishing the colony at the Lonely Mountain, Dain struck up a strong partnership with the humans in the area. First of all, that meant Bard himself, the Slayer of Smaug. 3 years after The Hobbit, Bard left his home in Lake Town to re-establish the town of Dale. You'll remember that as the ruined settlement just outside the Lonely Mountain. He declared himself king, and his son Brand inherited from him. It was Brand who stood beside Dain Ironfoot during the War of the Ring. In the intervening years, Dale grew and prospered. Bard hadn't gone to Dale on his own. Plenty of the citizens of Lake Town went with him, tilled the land and traded with the dwarves. Soon the Bardings, as they became known, had built a relative economic powerhouse in the region, trading up and down the River Running. Lake Town also did well. It had been basically burned to the ground by Smaug's attack, but plans were made to rebuild it in a slightly different part of the lake, as the people didn't really want to be right next to a massive rotting dragon corpse. Bard gave a lot of money to the cause, but not long after, the Master of Lake Town, surely one of the bigger, low-key villains of the story, embezzled the money and ran off into the wastelands with some companions. The films accelerated that part of the plot, but the point remains the same, and his fate was also bleak in the books. His companions abandoned him, and he discovered that all his new stolen gold couldn't feed him. He died shortly after, friendless and foodless. Lake Town, meanwhile, under a new master, rebuilt and prospered as a part of the same economic trading friendship with Dale and Erebor. Basically, that whole region was a success story. The people had strong, capable leaders and grew happy and prosperous. The threat of Smaug was gone, and decades of peace and positive trading relations followed. I also did a video on Beorn, for his is a complex but ultimately positive story. At the start of The Hobbit, he was a loner, bitter with the memories of what had happened to his people. But by the end, he hosts Gandalf and Bilbo for a very merry Christmas, then marries, we know not exactly who, and fathers an entire race of Beornings. The Beornings seem to expand swiftly. Very probably lots of other Northmen and women gathered under the umbrella of Beorn's undoubted command and charisma once he had abandoned his solipsistic ways, and he probably also had lots of children, who also had lots of children. There are 3 or 4 human generations between The Hobbit and The Lord of the Rings. We don't often think of that, because so many of the characters we know were immortal or long-lived, but one man could potentially have dozens of descendants in that time. In any event, the Beornings played a small but important role in the War of the Ring, and before, assisting Aragorn and opposing Sauron. The Eagles, well, they carried on doing Great Eagle things. It's likely, though never 100% confirmed, that the Great Eagle of The Hobbit is different to Gwaihir, the Lord of the Eagles that we meet in The Lord of the Rings. Okay, let's turn our attention to the bad guys in the story. The goblins obviously took quite a beating in The Hobbit, both with the killing of the Great Goblin and their defeat in the Battle of the Five Armies. But orcs and goblins, if you want to know the difference, there will be a video in the next few weeks, multiply quickly, like humans. So by the time of the War of the Ring, they were once more bolstered in strength. The orcs of Moria continued to grow in strength, as did those in Gundabad and under the Misty Mountains. This was a defeat, but not an irrevocable one. During the War of the Ring, we obviously saw an orc horde in Moria, but another joined with Sauron's forces from Dol Guldur to attack northern Mirkwood, Lothlorien, and northern Rohan. Sauron was also affected by The Hobbit. The White Council chose that moment to attack him in his base in Dol Guldur. They won, sort of, and forced him back to Mordor, where he declared himself publicly a few years later. For some unexplained reason, the White Council left Dol Guldur unattended, and Sauron commissioned Chamul the Easterling to take control of his forces there, which he soon bolstered. Often overlooked, but probably very importantly, we have Gollum. Gollum stayed for a bit in the Misty Mountains, afraid as he was of the sunlight and moonlight, but then, as Gandalf picks up the story, after a year or two, he left the mountains. You see, though still bound by desire of it, the ring was no longer devouring him. He began to revive a little. He felt old, terribly old, yet less timid, and he was mortally hungry. Light, light of sun and moon, he still feared and hated, and he always will, I think, but he was cunning. He found he could hide from daylight and moonshine, and make his way swiftly and softly by dead of night with his pale, cold eyes, and catch small frightened or unwary things. He grew stronger and bolder with new food and new air. He found his way into Mirkwood, as one would expect. From Mirkwood, he traced Bilbo's movements to the Lonely Mountain and back, then headed south to Mordor when Sauron announced himself and drew evil to him. Not that Gollum was evil, per se, it was complicated, but his connection to the ring was pivotal there. Him heading to Mordor led to his capture, which led to Sauron knowing about the Shire and Baggins, which led to the Black Riders, which led to much of the action of The Lord of the Rings. Yes, for all of the geopolitical shifts that followed the events of The Hobbit, the death of Smaug, the establishment of the Erebor-Dale-Lake Town Economic Alliance, Beorn's foundation of an entire new race, and so on. In true Tolkien style, the most important thing that happened in the aftermath of The Hobbit was a small, complex creature sneaking out of the Misty Mountains and following his heart, however distorted that heart might have been. Tolkien cared about the normal people in life, not just the lords and generals. So perhaps it is right that the key outcome of The Hobbit was the emergence into the world of a small, deeply flawed and broken creature like Gollum, in search of his precious, which was now in possession of another small and flawed, though ultimately good, character in Bilbo. For all of the wars and important events, it would always be the small folk who were the most important in Tolkien's world. If you'd like to see more Lord of the Rings videos like this, there's a link to my playlist on the left of your screen now. Or to support this channel, thank you. There's a link to my Patreon page on the right of your screen. Thanks for watching. That's all for this time. I'll see you again soon.